Welcome back to Making It So. This is episode 26. I'm your host, Craig, and my co-host, Maddie. How you going, buddy?
What's up?
Talking more Star Trek Discovery this week.
Yay.
Season 5.
No, it's not that bad.
Oh, I've actually had a bit of a chat with a couple of our listeners. And
they're not slipping into the DMs, are
they?
Yeah,
a couple of people have.
How many nudes you get?
None.
Oh.
And it's mainly been dudes, so like,
you know. Hey, I don't discriminate. Look, I've always said, if you're gonna slip into my DMs, have nudes.
Yeah, well, honestly, you know? I would prefer it if a female came into my DMs with nudes,
sure,
over a dude. But hey, whatever.
Hey, like I say on any podcast I'm on, we're all God's children in the dark.
All right. Anyway, so we're covering off today on season 5, episode 4 of Strange New Worlds, and this episode is called Face the Strange. However, before we talk about that, there is a little bit of Star Trek news that I want to quickly talk about.
Okay.
Today, we're actually recording this a week before the episode airs, because we managed to get some screeners.
Yes.
Not screamers, screeners.
Well, I mean, that depends on your DMs, I guess. Yeah, and this is our last advanced one. So
it
anyone
is.
who's jealous or anything like that, don't be. It's fine. We only got to see the first 4. By episode 5, we're going to be watching it along at the same time as everybody
Unless
else.
Paramount wants to send us some more screeners.
Great, like, people at Paramount. Yeah, great. Like, I've always
sponsor
said
the show.
That. I've always said that. Great people at Paramount Plus, if they want to sponsor the show and send us some more screamers or streamers or screeners.
Or screeners. Like, plenty of different words to use.
Yeah, I'd love a free Paramount Plus subscription. That'd be great.
Instead of just bludging it off other people.
I absolutely don't do that. I definitely pay for my own subscription, 100%.
Of course you do. I get mine through Prime Video.
The double dip.
Yeah, I added the extra thing and it costs like $5 extra or something.
That makes sense because Lower Decks and Picard originally started on Amazon, didn't they?
I think so, yeah.
And then, because that was before...
And then Paramount started their own.
And yeah, and then they had some of it, but like some of it was on Amazon, some of it was on... So I guess it's good for you that it's all just there anyway.
Yeah, it's just one app and I don't have to mess around too much.
Nice.
Plus I've got the button for it on my TV remote, whereas I don't have a Paramount button.
I hate that. I've got a Netflix... Sorry to Paramount Plus. Take it up with Samsung. My Samsung has a Netflix button and I hate it because the amount of times I sit on my remote and suddenly Netflix opens up while I'm like on a different app, obviously the Paramount Plus app. Yeah, that's frustrating.
I wish I had a Pornhub button.
Oh, see, that's how we lose the subscriptions. That's how we lose the sponsorships.
Anyway, the news that's come out. Paramount has officially added a Star Trek, in air quotes, origin story film to the 2025 release slate.
Right.
What origin story are we telling? Like, all right,
my panic mode goes straight to Stargate Origins, which is scary.
Ooh. So we've already seen the first flight of the Phoenix.
Yep.
In First Contact.
Yep.
Then we've seen Earth, you know, venturing out with Starfleet into the cosmos with Enterprise.
Yep. The first JJ film showed us young Spock and young Kirk growing up as children.
Yeah, we
and the birth of Kirk.
Yeah,
we got to see the birth of Kirk.
Speaking of that, this is going to be produced by J.J. Abrams with his Bad Robot company.
Yeah.
But if it's an origin film, it'll be before the timeline split.
Correct. Yeah, because the timeline split.
So it won't be a Kelvin timeline.
The second Nero came through the anomaly, that was when the timeline split, wasn't it?
That was
the divergent point.
As Kirk was born on the Kelvin.
Yeah. Interesting. So yeah, if it's prior to that.
So it would be prime timeline.
It would technically be prime timeline. Unless they decide they're going to do, well, we're going to do the origin of the mirror universe or some shit like that.
Or they just knows. Probably just don't understand what the hell they're doing.
Yeah, that's.
But Maddie and I were having a bit of a chat earlier on Messenger.
Mm.
And we were like, well, what could they possibly do?
Yeah, what's a story that we as fans would actually want to be told from that period?
Like, and we sort of did mention, you know, maybe Sarek or, you know, like. Maybe Sarek's birth and then his early life or something.
Given like the Enterprise timeline and the things we find out from there, time period, not timeline, perhaps, you know, it could be, like a birth of the Federation or the early steps of the Federation.
And that would be cool.
And intertwined with that is, you know, Sarek's first meeting with Amanda, what's her last name? Grayson, I want to say?
Yeah.
You know, and some potential like, early Federation racism, like we saw in Enterprise with T'Pol and Trip, you know, interbreeding between Vulcans and humans. So potentially, there's something there.
I would love to see you know, like a continuation of like Jonathan Archer, you know, as the Federation is being.
Yeah, that could be interesting. And I think I read is either Spock's or Sarek's grandfather was the first Vulcan ambassador to Earth.
And that happened, was it 4 years after the end of the Enterprise series?
No, that's when Sarek was born.
When Sarek was born.
Sarek was born 4 years, the 10 years later future. Was when Sarek was born, like a few years after that.
Okay.
So yeah, there could be something in there. Maybe, you know, enough time has passed. Like, I was never a huge fan of Enterprise, so maybe enough time has passed where there's enough nostalgia. And I know that, you know,
I'd watch it for
definitely
sure.
In the same way that I think DS9 wasn't very popular during its initial run and found its footing and cult following in reruns. I feel like, Enterprise seems to have aged a little bit better. So that it seems to have a much bigger following now than it did.
Streaming has definitely helped Enterprise. Like for us here in Australia, when it showed on regular free to air television, because we really didn't have, we weren't rich enough to have pay TV, or, you know, what they call cable in America,
which is so crazy to think about. Like as kids, like, you know, $40 a month for Foxtel was like, that is so ridiculously expensive. And now that we all have like 8 different streaming services.
Yeah.
Of course, we'd love Paramount Plus, but
yeah, sure.
Yeah, we're all paying like more than that now in streaming services. And then we've got to pay for internet on top of that.
But of course, Maddie and I are just speculating about what they could possibly do here.
It could be anything. Like,
I have heard, I saw a thing a while ago and it may have been just someone else speculating as well, getting Chris Hemsworth back to play Kirk's dad earlier on in his career, maybe?
I thought that was the abandoned Star Trek 4 premise. And they couldn't get a deal because Chris Hemsworth wants way too much money now because he's on Avengers money.
Well, yeah. And he, like, remember in that movie at the beginning, he was so skinny.
Yeah.
Now, like, how would they explain that?
Dude, you should see him back in the day when he was on Home and Away.
Oh, yeah, he was super skinny, yeah.
Yeah, but yeah, he had a really good, like, 2010, 2011, where, like, oh, I guess 2009 was when the first Star Trek film came out. Then there was Cabin in the Woods. What's the one?
The Huntsman.
Red Dawn.
Didn't he do The Huntsman?
Yeah, maybe. I can't remember if he did the first one or the second one. But it was all kind of his, like, pre-Thor stuff. He just had a really good couple of years through there where, you know, he wouldn't be getting paid Thor money. But, yeah, nowadays.
Yeah, owning a mansion in Byron Bay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, yeah, Maddie and I just speculating there. But, yeah, it is what it is. Like, I'm being the Star Trek tragics that we are, you know, even if it does sound like it'll be a terrible movie or show, we'll probably still watch it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a bit of a completionist. I think, yeah, any Star Trek that is ever produced throughout the rest of my life, I'll probably still watch it.
Yeah, I always say, like, there's no point hating something that you haven't seen.
Yeah, and, like, even if I hate 20 episodes of something, I might still find an episode that I do like.
Yeah, and there's that saying where it's like, who do you trust more? If there's two people sitting there, both saying they hate broccoli, one person's eaten broccoli and decided they hate it. The other person's never eaten and just gone, no, that doesn't look right, doesn't smell right, I hate it. You're going to trust the person who's eaten the broccoli more that you shouldn't do it. So, yeah, it's like you can watch something and if you don't enjoy it, that's fine.
For the record, I like broccoli.
Broccoli's great.
Yeah, it's great. Little trees.
Yeah.
It's like destroying the woods.
Yes, you just feel like I'm a giant eating trees. Nom, nom, nom.
Anyway. Rightio, back to season 5, episode 4, Face the Strange. But before we start, all right, bit of a red alert. If you haven't seen the episode yet, please go off and watch it. Like, we don't want to spoil your viewing experience at all.
Yeah.
All right, however, if you have no intention of watching the episode and you just want to hear us yap on for the next, you know, 45 minutes or however long it is,
yeah,
please feel free. And, you know, get into the comments section, send us DMs. Comment on
have nudes ready if you're slipping into my DMs.
Comment on the actual podcast itself on whatever platform that you listen on. I'm sure we'll see it, right? And you know, at the end,
if it's Facebook only, Craig will see it.
Yeah, if it's on Facebook, I'll see it. That's fine. You know, because I'm still there. If you're a hip new kid, and you want to be on TikTok, hit up Maddie.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's unfortunate for all our American listeners.
Why?
TikTok's getting banned in America.
Is it actually?
It's getting close.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Where could we find you on the socials, Maddie?
That's for the end of the episode. You'll have to wait and see.
Maddie needs to write it down so he can spell it out.
Yeah. You'll never find me on TikTok because I like to creep on there. So you don't want to know the things I look at on TikTok.
Oh,
so
no. I don't even know the things he creeps at.
What do I call it? It's an alt account. It's an alt.
Fair enough. Yeah. Anyway, so Face the Strange. The synopsis reads, on the way to the next clue, the USS Discovery is sabotaged by a mysterious weapon, leaving Captain Burnham, Rayner and Stamets as the only crew members who can possibly save the ship in time. This episode was written by Sean Cochran and directed by Lee Rose.
This one goes out to anyone who follows our Stargate podcast over on Get Into Gate. Space bugs.
Bugs.
Yeah. Sure it's not written by Cooper? Is that a Cooper pseudonym?
Maybe. It could Cochran, very Cooper. Well be.
Cochran.
Yeah, it could very well be Cooper. All right, if it is Cooper, look out. All right, so this episode starts off with, what's his name? Janak? What? No. What's his name?
Who?
No, the dude with Mole.
Mole and Locke.
Mole and Locke, that's right.
Yeah.
My writing is terrible.
Janak.
Janak.
Mole Someone's going to steal that. That's going to be a sci-fi character in like 6 months. Janak.
You're welcome. Right, Mole and Locke. They're at a trader. Right, trying to buy something, and we don't exactly know what it is straight away.
Yeah, because you get that little text that pops up and says 3 days earlier or something like that. Yeah.
So they're looking to buy a little bug off him, and it's literally a mechanical, bug with legs that walks around.
That's see through.
Yeah, it's got like its own little cloaking thing, I guess. Or
yeah, it's basically what we saw on Adira's hand last week. So that's why we kind of have the, 3 days earlier. It's funny, it kind of for a second I thought it was the Infinity thing that Old Mate had in episode one or whatever, because that's another like little tiny clear glass looking sort of gadget. But no, the little bug for Adira.
And what did he want? He wanted, was it 3 bars of latinum or something for it?
Something like that.
They poisoned him instead.
Yeah, I didn't hear a lot of the dialogue because I was too busy staring at that guy's face. That alien, he looked really, really familiar in terms of his race. He almost looked like a Tosk from one of the really, really early episodes Deep Space Nine, like episode 2 or 3, where there's that weird sort of reptilian guy that pops in that can turn invisible. That O'Brien helps out, who's being hunted by people. It looked like one of those with hair. Or maybe even the people that were hunting it. But anyway, just look vaguely. There's a lot of like vaguely familiar looking aliens this season.
Yeah, oh, definitely. And there's a lot of more mixed races now as well. Which makes sense.
It's always been an odd thing where like every Romulan looks the same. And it's like 900 years later, it would make sense there'd be more interbreeding between species. Yeah,
like a Romulan mixed with a Klingon or something would be cool.
Have we ever seen that combo?
Or a Romulan mixed with a Norsican.
Whoa.
A Klingon mixed with a Norsican?
That'd be an ugly motherfucker. God damn.
That would be very, very ugly.
Yeah. As it is, they tried to make B'Elanna Torres really, really ugly. And Roxanne Dawson was actually really, really clever where they actually gave her Klingon teeth. And she just pretended like she couldn't speak with them properly when they were doing like all the first makeup tests.
Human teeth,
And then they gave her like a big Worf nose as well. And she went, no. So she just had like a little line down the front of the bridge of her nose. She knew what was up.
She
was very clever.
She probably spoke to Michael Dorn and was like, hey, what up?
Yeah. He's like, don't do it.
40 years later and he's still wearing that crap.
Yeah.
All right, Michael and Rayner, they're talking in the ready room.
Well, before we get to that,
okay,
there's just one other thing I want to circle back on the whole Mole and Locke thing. I was under the impression they had more of a familial sibling kind of...
Oh, no, they'd be fucking.
Yeah, I wasn't prepared for that. That was a lot. I was like, oh, definitely not brother and sister.
Oh, no.
Definitely not found family.
Well, she's human, and he's...
Unknown.
Unknown.
Unknown to this point. That was... bracing. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Mm.
Maddie surprised. So Michael and Rayner are talking in her ready room, and it's a little bit tense, because he is now her first officer.
Mm.
So
took the demotion.
Yeah.
It's commander now.
Yeah, so it's not like when was it Michael and
Saru
were both captains and she was
captain and then he was first officer. Yeah. Yeah, I hated that.
So it's not like that.
Yeah, I'm glad he took the demotion. Like yeah. From a story point of view, it's interesting, but it also like for his character, but it also makes more sense chain of command wise.
Well yeah, and it's not the first time where we've seen someone that, you know, of higher rank getting demoted. Like Kirk was an admiral for a while and then he got demoted.
Well, and you know,
put him back on the Enterprise. So
yeah. And then like, yeah, what we found out last week is, you know, because of how the council, whatever, wasn't happy with Rayner and what he was doing, he was being forced into retirement and he was no longer. So it was like, he was either taking the retirement or taking the demotion.
Mm.
So, it doesn't quite make a lot of sense, but for this story, it's like, fine, cool. Let's see what he's got.
So, and last week they mentioned about the pathway drive and the Voyager J was the first one actually to test the pathway drive.
Is that the mycelial drive
you're
talking about?
No, so the pathway, it's so obviously we've got normal warp drive.
Yep.
And then what was the Dauntless in Voyager? That had
slipstream
quantum drive.
Slipstream.
And, you know, that necessarily didn't work properly. So they've come up with this new pathway drive and there's been no proper explanation for exactly what that does, but it's obviously a lot faster than regular warp drive.
Oh, I don't remember any of that.
It was mentioned in season 3, I think, the pathway drive.
Oh, maybe as a way to, as a different version of warp drive after the burn, I guess.
Yes, it is.
Right.
Yeah, so.
So is that what Book's ship traveled at, or?
I don't think so. No, so it was the Voyager J was the first one to try it.
Gotcha.
Yeah. What do you think of that ship, by the way?
Don't like it.
No, I just detach the cells doesn't do it for me.
I just don't like any of the shapes. Like none of it looks nice. If people are into it, that's great. I don't like Kirk era ships either. Like I don't like Excelsiors or Constitutions or any of that. They don't really do it for me.
No, that's fair.
You're
a 24th, 25th century sort of guy.
2370s is the gold age, baby. I'm a Defiant class. I'm an Intrepid class. I'm an Akira class kind of guy. I think the earliest ship I really, really like is, I believe it's the Ambassador, which was like the Enterprise C.
Mm-hmm. You're correct.
I wasn't a huge fan of that in the show because obviously I think it's a very brief appearance. But then I got the...
It's very blue.
Yeah. I got the Eagle Moss model.
Ah.
And that I was like, oh, baby. This is nice. It doesn't have a bad angle. Even as much as I love the we're digressing now into my feelings on different kinds of ships, but you know, I love the Intrepid, but it's got an ugly ass. It's like it's got some really ugly angles, and from the rear it looks terrible. Whereas the Ambassador, I'm like, I don't think this bitch has got any bad angles. I like it. Mm. So, but yeah, I've yet to see any of the ships in this show do it for me.
Yeah,
I go, yeah, that's hot.
Anyway, so Stamets sees the bug
on
the ship. Then the ship goes to warp by itself. And we're like, what the hell is going on here?
Before that, when Rayner and Michael are having their little bitchy back and forth on the bridge, and she's like, I want to see you in my ready room.
Yes.
And they transport to the ready room. That is just so, like, an unnecessary flex. It really put me off, and then I realized it was literally the main, like, driving force of this episode. Yeah. As I'm going on, I'm like, oh, none of this would have happened if they had just walked. Because it's literally, I don't know the Discovery ship very well, and I'm like, but wouldn't her ready room just be off the bridge? And then as the episode went on, I'm like, oh, so you kind of, like, walk through the turbo lift, and the doors on the back of the turbo lift are her ready room, which is weird. But yeah, it just seemed unnecessarily showy for them to just like tap their badges and just like beam from the bridge into the ready room. Like,
I just don't know how people get their step count up in
right?
the 32nd century or wherever the hell they are.
Yeah, yeah, it's a bit wild.
Like, I think Michael Burnham probably does about 43 steps a day.
Yeah, like who bothered? Like, yeah, just I don't know.
They must have like an injection or a hypo spray that keeps them all skinny.
must do. The
not all of them obviously take it.
An Ozempic, yeah, they got an Ozempic injection.
32nd century version,
I suppose, because in not to digress to yet another different Star Trek show, but in the final season of Deep Space Nine, when Cassidy Yates gets pregnant, and she's like, Ben forgot to take his injection or whatever, so he like takes an injection to be sterile or whatever. I don't know. So yeah, I guess it makes sense.
Anyway, so the ship goes to warp by itself, and then all of a sudden we see people with old uniforms and the Red Angel. And we're like, what the hell is going on here?
Do you want to know the level of freak out that I had when the Red Angel was mentioned?
Were you like, what are we watching?
I was like, no. No, I literally only said like a week ago, like, how glad I was, like, we're so far away from... I mentioned the bad uniforms.
They're like, we're bringing it back.
I mentioned, like, that's one of my least favorite things. And given that, like, that's the season that introduced Pike and the new Spock and all that kind of stuff, like, the Red Angel just triggers me something fierce. And I'm so glad that it wasn't a part of the episode. It was just a brief mention and then moving on because, yeah, that... I got really concerned. Because for the most part, been enjoying this season more than I have in previous seasons. So yeah, to get a mention of the Red Angel, I was like, bleh. I was the meme of Jerry Seinfeld, just
yeah, it was like, what is happening?
It's
here?
Not good.
And
not
then we
good.
Get the opening credits.
Yeah.
So, yep. So Michael and Raina, they have traveled back in time to the point where Discovery travels to the 32nd century.
Yeah, because the Red Angel was what led them there, wasn't it? Like, and Michael was like, "That's me," and it's kind of convenient the way that Michael ends up running through time with the one person on that ship that doesn't know Discovery's history. Like,
yeah,
every other like crew member on there, they're gonna know what's going on, and it just happens to be the new first officer, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, but it's a good way to sort of introduce him and see that interaction between the captain and a new first officer as he learns to work for her, really.
It kind of reminded me as like a bizarro version of Shattered from Voyager, where, you know, season 7 Chakotay is going through fractured parts of the ship and has to work together with like pre-Voyager Janeway. And he has to be like, you know me. We're best friends. We know all these things about each other. You have to trust me. And she's like, no, I've been sent to hunt you. so, yeah, it sort of gave me a less interesting version of Shattered.
Yeah, true. And then they time jumped again. This time they time jumped to San Francisco to the day Discovery was being built.
On dry dock.
Yep.
That was so jarring for me because as a 2370s kid, I'm used to like ships being built in dry dock in space.
Yeah.
And then I was like, what the hell is it doing on the planet? And then I remembered like JJ's 2009 Star Trek where you see the Enterprise being built on Earth as well. And I'm like, oh, that's right.
So like even
we're in the dark times.
Even the Enterprise NX-01 was built in space.
Oh, yeah. JJ.
Then again, like not all Starfleet ships that we see are capable of atmospheric flight, though.
Correct.
So, yeah, obviously Voyager is.
But it was built in space.
Yes, but obviously, like the Enterprise E, as far as we can tell, isn't capable of atmospheric flight.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, maybe.
Yeah, maybe it was just literally just a reference to
well, then again,
JJ Trek.
In we have seen a Crossfield class be in Strange New Worlds take off off of a planet as well. So the Crossfield class, which is Discovery.
Wasn't that like an altered version of it though?
Chunks
of it?
Yeah, maybe they are capable of atmospheric flight.
Well, I guess they have to be because if they're built planet, they've got to take off at some point unless another ship comes and like a tug and tows it up in a tractor beam. Yes, like I don't know my like original series lore very well, so I don't know if that's like a throwback to something that was set up in the original series or not, but the only reference I know to ships being built actually on planet is the first JJ film.
So it is what it is. Then they jumped back to the battle for control.
Just the greatest hits of shit of this show. Like
it is the final season. All right, so then we learn a little bit about this bug now at this point. So it's a time bug.
It's a Krennim
time bug. Yes.
Yeah.
Right? And it's left over from the temporal Cold War or the temporal war.
Yeah, I think there's a difference between like the temporal Cold War that Enterprise went through
and, the temporal war.
Yeah, the temporal war, which would make sense for the Krenim because obviously that's Year of Hell from Voyager. From Voyager. And even
with Kurtwood Smith. Yeah. Great episode.
Great two-parter.
Yeah, I actually that episode or two-parter, that really stands out in my mind as one of the best episodes.
I believe it's a fan favorite. Mm. Yeah, absolutely. I think of the two-parters from season four, I think I lean a little more towards The Killing Game with the Hirogen.
Yep.
Spoiler alert. Oh my God. I'm going back to LA in September and I'm going on the Universal tour, I believe. And I'm pretty sure I'll be going on that set, like the French town set from The Killing Game. Mm-hmm. Pretty sure I'll be like walking those steps. I'm so excited.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. any connection to Voyager, I'll take.
Yeah, fair enough.
The Krenim were first mentioned in Before and After, that mm-hmm. weird Kes episode in season three. And then, season four, we get Year of Hell. That's all reset. But then right at the end, Anorax, like you see that he's still working on the temporal stuff. So, yeah, the Krenim still have temporal technology available to them. So obviously that's a nice little sort of carry on. And it's been 800 years or whatever. And
they're the types of things that keep Maddie interested.
Yeah. Self-sealing stem bolts and Krenim mentions. Like, okay, I know these things. It is giving a little like, member berries.
Yeah.
But not in an egregious way. Like, if you think about anyone using time as a weapon, any Star Trek fan, I think, will think about the Krenim. Because it's like there was the temporal Cold War in Enterprise, but we never really found out who that shadowy figure was. They never, it wasn't the original plan. It was going to be Archer.
To digress a little bit, Romulan. If they did another season, the plan was that it was going to be Archer, who was the shadowy future guy. And it was him trying to fix up some mistakes that they'd made.
Yeah.
But, it just was a plot line that just went nowhere. And it was like a massive plot line.
The worst thing of it was, at the end of season three where it was like, oh, we finally stopped the Zindi or whatever. And then there's like a big explosion and Archer wakes up in like a live action version of The Killing Game where there's like alien space Nazis and he's... And then we never hear about the Zindi ever again. And I'm just like, what? It was,
That was a good episode, that one. I like that. I actually really liked Enterprise. And I know you weren't a massive fan of it.
I was never a fan.
Yeah. There are plenty of people out there that did love it.
And there wasn't enough Hoshi Sato. She was my character. If anyone was going to get me into Enterprise, it was Hoshi. And
didn't
then they
used to have a little thing for Asian chicks?
Excuse me? That feels wildly inappropriate.
Why?
I just thought she was an interesting character.
Yeah, fair enough.
But they never did anything with her character. Her and Mayweather, I think, suffered the most.
She's like, she actually Korean playing a Japanese person?
I mean, weirdly, they did the same thing with Garrett Wong. He's Korean, I think, and he was playing Chinese. But then he's like, Wong is a Korean last name, not a Chinese last name. Like they murdered in terms of current day. Harry Kim would never exist in the way that. Kim.
Kim is a Korean last name.
Yes, but he was played as Chinese because early in those early seasons, like there's an old Chinese expression. Blah 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 blah. Blah. So he was. I guess in the same way, Sulu was kind of he was a representative of every Asian country. But then later on, what's the character's name? The actor's name. I've completely forgotten.
George Takei.
That's right. Cause he said once, Takei rhymes with gay. That's how you say his name.
Of course you remember that.
Well, he's gay. That's why he did it.
Of course you remember.
Yeah. Because everyone would mispronounce his name. But I think he was the one that inserted. He's like, well, no, Sulu has Japanese heritage. Like, that was his kind of thing. So, we'll get back to Discovery.
Anyway, that time bug is left over from, those temporal wars. But Stamets, who apparently lives outside of time because of the tardigrade DNA.
Is that something that we're supposed to know?
I vaguely, there might have been something that has been said previously, and I couldn't even remember.
Because that was a wild statement to me. A, because I'm like, what does that mean? And B, he's been living his life normal as far as I can tell. Like,
yeah, it's like, obviously when it comes to things like the Next Generation, DS9, Voyager, yeah, like Maddie and I have got pretty good recall on that stuff because we've watched those episodes probably 30 or 40 times each.
Oh, and the rest.
Yeah, and the rest.
When it comes to DS9 and Voyager, and I'm not a huge fan of Next Generation, and there's probably Next Generation episodes I've seen 30 or 40 times.
Yeah.
Like Voyager is in like triple digits easily. Every episode, triple digits. Not a problem.
But yeah, we don't have that recall on Discovery.
No.
Yeah, because like I've only watched most Discovery episodes. Some once, a couple two, maybe three times.
Every episode once, except for the one where they kill Arium. I watched that twice, and it wasn't as good the second time around.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Mm. But yeah, anyway, so Stamets lives outside of time because of his tardigrade.
Sure,
DNA.
Why not?
Right. Jet, we get to see Jet Reno.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. You know, she helps them beat the dudes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. And then just kind of like just goes about on her way. They just they just separate again.
They rock up in like basically motorcycle gear, and they beat the crap out of them. And
oh yeah, because that was in that time period, or whether it was someone was attacking the ship or whatever. Yeah, and it kind of like Jet kind of, I think they kind of tricked her into thinking they were current time.
Yeah, but them. Maybe she's just like, whatever. I just want to get on with my job.
Yeah, it was weird that they didn't stay together. You would think in an emergency like that, you'd be like, oh, yeah, I'll stick with the captain. Sure. Yeah, that was an odd one.
Then it jumps again. So we're getting lots of time jumps in this episode.
Before that, though, there was a weird thing that Michael said.
Okay.
When she's analysing the Krennenbach. And she says, there must be a pattern to the time jumps.
Yes.
Why must there be a pattern? Wouldn't that make it a less effective weapon? We find out later on
it should be like random.
Yeah, why must there be a pattern to the time jumps? If anything, yeah, you'd want it to be just crazy random.
I guess
10 seconds here, 3 minutes there. You don't want to find a pattern. So
I guess at some point, no matter what, you would reach a pattern. But that could be millions or billions or trillions.
Right? And they say that this weapon only is supposed to kind of just screw you up for a couple of days, you know? Yeah, so I found that a little bit clunky, like to be like them saying that it must have a pattern.
It's just like another.
It's like chaos. Guess what? Chaos theory doesn't have a pattern. That's why it's chaos theory.
Like it's just another time thing, another way of traveling through time that we've seen in Star Trek now.
Yeah,
as well, and you know it's very weird. But then they jump again, and this jump, there's music playing on the ship, and the ship's abandoned. The crew's all dead. Federation headquarters is all destroyed.
This was a Short Trek reference, right?
I don't know. Was it?
I thought, wasn't there a Short Trek? And it was like, Discovery was abandoned. I think that's the first like instance of Zora or whatever. And there's just like that one black guy who kind of, he's like a, is he a thief or something like that? And he just kind of wakes up in a stasis chamber or something like that. And he's like the only person on Discovery and it's been abandoned for centuries or something like that.
See, that's another one of those things where like I've seen like the Short Treks maybe once each. And I can't.
Oh, I mean, except for.
It does sound
vaguely. Except for the one where Number One is singing in the.
That's excellent.
In the turbo lift. Aside from the fact that the exterior of the turbo lift.
Gilbert and Sullivan,
that's it. Except for the shot where they show like the JJ style turbo lifts that just kind of just like move through giant open spaces. That makes no sense. But yeah, that actual scene with her and Spock is fantastic.
And this is where they mention the Krennum Chrono thing at this point.
The what?
This is where they talk about the Krennum at this point as well.
Oh, I thought they mentioned it earlier.
No. Well, they might have mentioned it earlier, but yeah, they definitely mentioned it.
My little Voyager ears.
Yeah, I was like, ding. Maddie's going to love that. Yeah, Stamets and Jet are having a chat, and then Michael finds him. Right, Michael then goes to her quarters, and Book comes in. And it's like an earlier version of Book when they're together. And you can see that she's all a bit awkward about it. And
just so dumb.
And then the whole time jump again.
Yeah.
So what are we? We're up to, seven.
I lost track of trying to.
Like, there's a lot.
Keep track, yeah. I just didn't buy the whole her being awkward because it's like neither of them want to be broken up. they just kind of were both really stubborn, and we spoke about it in that episode. So, yeah, why wouldn't she just be like, yeah, Mac on me, let's do it. Now, I guess she was probably in business mode, and she's like, we're currently spiraling through time, so I would rather her play it annoyed and, oh, I have to try and let him not know that I'm not his Michael.
Yeah.
I would rather that than her be playing it awkward because, oh my God, we just broke up and now I have to pretend I'm in love with him. They're obviously still in love with each other.
Yeah. And hopefully by the end they saw that out. Yeah. It doesn't become a massive, it's obviously a big plot point.
Yeah, I didn't like that bit.
So, yeah, then we figure out that the bug has temporal shielding on it.
That's right, because someone goes to put their hand on it and it like fucks their hand or whatever.
Yeah. So, yeah, all right.
Which is clever.
Yeah.
Clever little redundancy for that weapon.
Then Michael goes into one of the turbo lifts and she sees Linus. So Linus is like the lizard bug looking guy.
Saurian?
Saurian, yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, oh no, hang on, Saurian, that's, isn't that the guys from Voyager, the dinosaurs?
No, that's the Voth.
The Voth.
The Voth.
Oh, yeah. So
they evolve from hadrosaurs.
Yeah. Yeah. He might be a Saurian. Yeah. But yeah. Linus is actually a cool character.
Yeah. I would like to see more of him. There's a part of his body movement that makes me wonder if the guy in that suit is actually like Doug Jones's like body double or stand in or something like that. Because just his hand movements and his very kind of gives me a little bit of Saru-ness to it. So okay. I wonder if maybe that's one of those instances where. It's a body double or a stand-in that they've assigned a character to. Because, yeah, Linus does pop up here and there.
Yeah, he does,
He's a fun character.
So, and then...
He's got more character progression than the other bridge officers. Yeah. So.
Then Michael runs into Michael.
Oh, my.
Like...
Burnham.
To have a look at, what was she? Specialist or something at that time, wasn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, to look at, Specialist Burnham to Captain Burnham. The change in appearance, the change in attitude.
Oh my God.
Like massive. Like
we were only talking about it in like episode one, like remembering season one Burnham and seeing season one Burnham.
Yeah.
You realize just how grating season one Burnham was.
And like we do talk about character progression a lot.
Yeah.
Michael has had massive character progression.
Do you know, I had to keep reminding myself that that's actually season five Sinequa Martin Green playing season one Michael Burnham. She did such a good job reenacting that character.
It makes me wonder if she had to go back and watch something.
Right? It was that entitlement, the I'm always right, blah, blah, blah. Mind you, it does poke a hole in every episode previously to this because, and it's, it's the criticism a lot of fans of Star Trek have always had about Michael. It's like, Michael can do no wrong. She's a Mary Sue, all those sort of things they throw at her. But at the end of the day, Michael always was right. No matter how much of a bitch she was, no matter how stubborn she was, no matter, how grating she was as a person, she was always right.
Yeah. Bit like me.
And now, season one Burnham meets season five Burnham, and suddenly season one Burnham was dead ass wrong.
Yeah.
Could not be more wrong and more of an annoyance and getting in the way of actually saving the ship. So it kind of actually now calls into question every other decision Burnham has ever made. It's like the only way Burnham can be wrong is when she's dealing with a future version of Burnham.
So anyway, they have a bit of a scrap there. And then the current Michael Burnham, the future Michael Burnham, Captain Burnham, she gives a Vulcan nerve pinch.
Yeah.
And
that was actually I was impressed with that fight. Like, it really did look like it was two Sinequa Martin Greens going at it. It was done really, really well. Maybe a little long. Could have maybe shaved another, 20 seconds off it or something like that. The actual fight itself felt a little long and repetitive.
So,
but the way it was shot, I was very impressed.
This actually makes me think of that clip one of the boys put up on the Get Into Gate Instagram the other day where it had Cliff Simon and the...
Oh, and Cloth Soman.
Yeah, and Cloth Soman.
Yeah.
Like... They did so well with this that we couldn't tell that it was someone else playing.
Yeah, obviously it would have had to have been her body double or a stunt person or something like that.
We don't get a Cloth Soman.
Yeah, I mean, maybe if we, freeze frame this, we might see something. But
potentially, I don't know. But no, they did a good job, because in so many different TV series or movies where you have like a future or alternate version of the same person and there's a fight or something, like sometimes you can definitely tell. Like Stargate's being bad with it.
The eye lines can be off. You can kind of see how they're just like staying to one side of the screen and the other. One of the most impressive ones, and you know, being the Voyager cuck that I am, one of the most impressive ones for me is Endgame with Captain Janeway and Admiral Janeway. That's another instance where I have to keep reminding myself that is the same actress playing against an empty space.
Yep.
Because that is done so well. Even just the scenes of them like walking down the corridor, talking to each other, I have to remind myself, holy shit, the other person wasn't there when they were doing that. Mm. So good.
Then we get to see Michael go onto the bridge and Arium is in the chair.
Yeah. Yeah, that was interesting. That was an interesting moment.
Yeah. So I thought that was cool to see Arium again. And then she actually tells Arium how she dies.
Yeah.
So, like, going against the temporal prime directive.
Yeah, it was interesting. I guess, they hid behind the fact that when this is all done, no one's going to remember, because the specifics of the Krenim temporal bug is none of them are going to remember this interaction. So I guess that was how she was able to sort of break the temporal prime directive and not fuck up the future. It was a little odd the way the rest of the bridge crew were just like, oh, okay, well, if Arium, like, we're all behind Arium. If you can convince Arium, then we're all fine. It's like, yeah.
Because at this point in their timeline, Michael Burnham is a traitor, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and they all hate her.
Yeah, so it's like,
which, okay. I mean, rightfully so. She was incredibly hateable. Yeah, it was interesting. Obviously, I'm not as emotionally connected to all these characters. And like I said, like...
It seemed a little bit convenient, though, that they just went along with it because Arium.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, and again, and it's one of the main criticisms I've always had of the show, it's like if we had more time invested in the other bridge officers, I think seeing Arium again would have been a bit more of a gut punch. Like, imagine, I guess Voyager's a bad example for it. Imagine Next Generation, it's an episode, and suddenly it's Tasha Yar sitting on the bridge.
Mm.
You know what I mean? That would be a gut punch. I mean, one of the greatest episodes in Star Trek history is Yesterday's Enterprise, where Tasha Yar shows back up again. And that's one of the reasons people love it, is because of that. So, if we'd spent more time on these characters, I think the Arium gut punch would, like I said, I enjoyed that episode the first time I watched it, because I'm like, oh my god, character progression, and then they kill her at the end of the episode, which annoys me to no end. And like I said, on a second rewatch, it wasn't as good for me. But I see what they were going for, and I think anyone invested in the show, I would imagine that would be a big moment. But it's also a bit weird because you have to suspend that disbelief, because I think anyone, even us as not big fans of Discovery, even we know the situation where the actress who originally played Arium is now just that blonde chick that's on the bridge. So it's like, so I don't know in this situation whether they got the second Arium to play that or whether they put the blonde chick back in the Arium makeup, or...
I think they put the blonde chick back in.
I don't know what the situation was there, but it's like us as... viewers have to suspend that disbelief where we go, oh, that's just the blonde chick who has still been here with us. And I think that also is one of the reasons why Arium's death isn't as poignant as it should be.
Yeah, well, I guess they just wanted to keep that actress around because...
Yeah, absolutely.
Good. Like, even as Arium, like that one proper episode we've got of Arium, that was really good, that episode.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's one of the ones of Discovery that sort of stands out for me.
Yes.
Yeah, because it had meaning, and then obviously she's died. But
yeah. I wish I wish like was it Owo or Uwo or whatever. I wish she'd gotten more. Like there was that one scene she got, you know, wrestling a bare knuckle boxing in a bar with Burnham last season or something like that. And we don't really get much for anybody else.
Awushipan?
Yeah, that's Awushipan? It. I think that sounds right. Yeah.
Like it's still 5 seasons in. Like we've spoken about this before, but we don't really. There's nothing to sort of make me remember all of their names.
Yeah, you have to think. You have to stop and think. And it's like, who's the...
Like, you can point someone out on, you know, DS9 or, you know, Next Gen and be like, bang, I know
this
person.
When you think about the fact that DS9 had 9 regulars, well, 8 and then 9 once
Worf joined. Well, that's true too, yeah.
So they had a larger main crew, but then DS9 had Nog and Rom and Leader and Garrick and Dukat and like so many other secondary characters who weren't even in the opening credits, who we know more about those characters than we do. I know more about Quark's ex-wife, Grilka,
yes,
than I do about any of the, you know, bridge officers on Discovery.
We also had, was it 26 episodes per season?
True. Very good point.
Whereas what we have 10 with this.
What were the previous seasons like? Were they like 13 or 16 or something like that?
Oh, I'd have to have a quick squeeze.
They definitely wouldn't have been even 22, I don't think.
Oh, as in for...
episodes per season.
For this?
Yeah.
Let's just quickly go back. So season one of Discovery, how many episodes did that have? That had 15 episodes.
Yeah.
Season two of Discovery had 14.
Yeah. So what's that? We're only up to 30.
Yeah. So season three, what'd that have? That had 13.
43.
Season four, what do we have there? We had 13 there as well.
56. So 66 episodes all up five seasons. It's not a lot of time. That's two seasons. If you think, do you know what's crazy? That's two seasons of either Next Gen, DS9 or Voyager.
Yeah. So, and that could be wild. That could be part of the problem for us. Because there is so long between the seasons as well.
Yeah.
That really could be part of our problem here. And I'm glad that we've managed to sort of figure that out a little bit too.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they do have the benefit of, like, they don't have that... Well, I guess this season, I don't know about previous seasons, they weren't locked into that kind of 44-minute runtime that the old-school stuff had to deal with. But, yeah, you make a really good point that we've only had, you know, two seasons worth spread out over 6 years.
Yeah, but characters like Worf, for instance, like, nobody has had more screen time.
No.
Like, or been in more episodes of Star Trek than Worf.
Yeah.
Like, he did, 7 seasons of Next Gen? He did
4 seasons of DS9.
Yep, and a season of Picard.
Season of Picard.
Plus he did...
All the Next Gen films.
All the Next Gen movies.
Plus he did Star Trek V. Remember he played like his own ancestor?
Yes, he played his grandfather.
Yeah, like as the lawyer for Kirk and
the Undiscovered Country. Bones.
Yeah, that's it, Undiscovered Country. Dorne's done more than anyone.
Yeah, he is the Star Trek god.
Absolutely. But it's crazy to think, though, that... I mean, I have to count them up, but technically you could maybe say a character like Garrick or Dukat potentially has done more episodes of Star Trek than Michael Burnham, and she's the lead of a whole series.
Yeah.
That's wild to think about.
So then past Michael comes in and gets Raina at Phaser Point. All right, and then Raina kills the bug.
All right. Oh, yeah, he reaches... They did the whole thing where they have to have the timing perfect.
And it wrecks his hand.
Yeah.
So, obviously, you know, he has to get that fixed. And it seems like it's not really a problem in the 32nd century to fix that.
Yeah, it seems like obviously he's like... It could be that situation.
It, like, made his hand older.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of another instance where there's definitely a sci-fi show where I've seen that where it's like, yeah, there's like... hit with some temporal thing and someone's hand gets all like shriveled and old and they have to go and sort of get it fixed and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So, that was a cool little thing.
So.
But yeah, God, old Burnham is still so annoying.
Oh, like, isn't she just?
Nobody likes you. Go away.
Yeah, she's got that big chip on her shoulder and it's just like, that is why we bloody hated you.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's funny, like, and like we've said in the last couple episodes, it's great to see the character progression.
Side by side, it was great.
Yeah, to what Captain Burnham is now. But I don't think I'd have the patience to actually go back and watch any of the previous seasons to enjoy that character progression. Like, you look at someone like, again, Garrick, Tom Paris. You know, there's characters who have had, you know, rough backgrounds. And you see this character, like, you look at Tom starting out as...
Or even Rom.
Rom, yeah. But you look at like Tom Paris starting out as like a felon in a penal colony, and by season 7 he's like, and you know, he was very much a loner, and he's got his best friend Harry, he's got his wife, he's got his daughter, he's got this not just his literal family, but his like extended chosen family on Voyager. Like he, Kirin Arrice to me has the biggest character arc of any character in Star Trek ever. Like she's literally a terrorist when we met her. You know what I mean? And has a fantastic character arc to the end. And it's like, I enjoy watching that. As rough and like brusque as Kirin Arrice was in season one, I still enjoy watching her.
What about Seven of Nine? She had some like, obviously, with Picard, she's had some great character progression.
I would say, as far as Voyager is concerned, she has a good arc and has probably some of Voyager's best episodes. Mm-hmm. And she's a fantastically, like, intriguing character to watch. But it's not until Picard that you go, oh, yeah, that's you see the full arc. But, I mean, you know, Seven only had, like, four seasons on Voyager.
She did.
So, whereas, you know, Kira had the full seven. Yeah, so to me, Kira is probably, I would say, in my top three Star Trek characters of all time. Like, I love Kirin Arrice. She's very, very cool. So, yeah, in the same way that I enjoy watching her character arc to grow from being this grumpy, brusque, aggressive kind of person, you still see the softness in her and you see someone that, like, if I'm like, in my head, if I lived in this universe, I would want to, like, peel back those layers of Kirin Arrice. I would want to get to know her, even if she's pushing me away. I would still want to get to know her.
Mm-hmm.
If I lived in Michael Burnham's universe, I would not want to get to know that woman. You know, not season one. Season five, absolutely. But I don't think that I would go back and watch previous seasons and enjoy the character arc to get her where she is now. Which is, I think, yeah, it's nice that this episode kind of shows it. And we can go, oh, that's right. She was intolerable back then.
Oh, yeah.
And now she's actually really a good character.
Anyway, so because they destroyed the bug, the time jumps have stopped. But yeah, they only lost 6 hours of time.
Correct.
Which is cool.
Now, the button at the very, very end of the episode is Adira walking in and she's aware of the lost 6 hours. That confused me.
I don't remember that.
Because at the start of the episode, she's like, like Stamets goes and asks her to go and do something. And at the end, I forget what the line is, but she comes in and she's like, where have you all been for the last 6 hours? Or why did it take me 6 hours to walk to the bridge? Or, you know, something. Almost like she's aware. Like in the same way they said Stamets is aware of all that kind of stuff. I don't know. So I don't know if that's a little nugget we're going to get paid off in next week's episode. Or whether it was just a joke that I missed the punchline of.
Maybe.
Maybe because
I didn't pick up on it.
Because Mole, like, put the bug on Adira and it went into Adira's skin. Oh. And that was, because remember it was like, that's how they got the bug on board Discovery, is Adira was at the Trill ceremony and Mole kind of brushed by her and popped the bug on her and you saw it disappear into her hand and then it came out of Adira when she was engineering and attached itself to the engines or whatever. So I'm wondering if maybe that's had some kind of effect on Adira. Or maybe I'm just overthinking it. Yeah, I don't know. But I just wanted to put a pin in that just in case we get some kind of resolution or continuation to that in next week's episode.
Yeah, I'll have to go back and rewatch that part.
It was a very weird, abrupt ending.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. So, but then Mole and Lorc are gone and we have to follow up their warp signature again.
Yeah.
So that's the end of that episode.
Was it established? Did Mole and Lorc actually get a piece of the puzzle while we were stuck, like while Discovery was stuck in that little loopy thing?
I don't know. I really don't know. Yeah. And it's only 6 hours, so.
But I think that was all supposed to be too. Like the Krennen bug was never supposed to like tie them up indefinitely. It was just supposed to slow them down for a few hours.
So maybe it was just enough that it could slow them down.
Yeah.
So they could get ahead.
Yeah. So or
maybe that's all it was.
Because do we know where they're headed next? Is it Beta Z?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Right.
Yeah, that's where we're off to next.
Yeah.
Which will be cool.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get to see a Betazoid wedding. Who knows?
Hopefully. I mean, you know, let's all get naked and have a Betazoid wedding. I'm sure there might be, you know, there should be some kind of, you know, Easter eggs. If we're doing this whole, you know, greatest hits kind of thing, traveling around, you know, chasing this up, it would be nice to, I guess, have we ever really been to Betazoid?
Yes.
In the show?
Yeah. I'm pretty sure we went to Betazoid in Next Generation.
Okay. I know one of my favorite books was The Battle of Beta Z.
Yes, that was a good book.
That's what got me into Star Trek books, yeah. Like non-canon books and stuff like that. Yeah, no, that
it's got a Counselor Troy on the front cover in a yeah. First Contact uniform with a phaser rifle?
No, she's in the more Dark Ops stuff. You know, from the Siege of AR-558 in DS9?
Yeah.
Where it's like all black with just the little pipeline?
Oh, is it?
I think she's in that from memory.
No, I thought it was
Because there's like a plot point where they give her... It does take place in the First Contact era, but they give... I remember there's like a plot line in it where they give her this sort of Dark Ops, like Black Ops...
The book's on my shelf in the other room. I could go get it, but yeah, whatever.
Yeah, we'll look at it later.
anyway, overall, a different episode, and it was good to sort of go back and see the difference between like early season Michael to now.
And I hate to use the term, but it did feel like a quote-unquote old school Star Trek episode. It was kind of like the episode of the week, you know, MacGuffin sci-fi, you know, techno babble of the week.
Mm.
But then still, you know, we're still carrying on with the story of hunting down all the puzzles and stuff like that.
I'm going to say I liked that episode. It was good.
Much like most of these episodes, I still have a few little icks here and there. But overall, I'm not like rolling my eyes at it and going, ugh, this is terrible.
It's like they're like the last season. Like, we've got to really redeem the show completely and send it out on a bang.
What is it with New Trek doing that? Like, Picard are like, we're actually going to just mic drop in our last season.
And boom, Enterprise D.
You know I had issues with that season, but overall it was like, you know.
It was
like,
excellent.
As I like to say, the juice was worth the squeeze, aside from what they did to my beloved changelings. but it's like, I mean, so far this season, yeah, the juice seems to be worth the squeeze. They may still fuck it up, who knows? But it's funny to think next week is the halfway point.
Yeah, because we've only got 10 episodes this season.
Yeah.
Next week's episode is called Mirrors.
Mirrors.
So, yeah, it says Captain Burnham and Book journey into extra-dimensional space in search of the next clue to the location of the progenitor's power.
Oh, so I guess we're not going to Beta Z.
No.
Unless the mirrors are on Beta Z because everyone's naked during Beta Zoid weddings, so they like to look at themselves.
In the trailer for this season, we do see, I think, is it the ISS Enterprise NCC-1701?
What's the the Mirror Universe.
Yes.
And the episode's called Mirrors.
Yes. So okay, that makes sense. Could be something there.
That was like DS9 when they did, because of the 2370s, DS9 was the only one that went to the Mirror Universe. Next Generation on Voyager never did.
No.
And every DS9 Mirror Universe episode had like mirror in the title. It was like, except for maybe the first one, but then it was like shattered mirror through the looking glass, you know.
As we know from the earlier, when they first came to the 32nd century, when they had the Empress, Georgia there.
Yeah.
They did mention that 32nd century Starfleet is fully aware of what's going on in the Mirror Universe.
Okay.
So, but I think the Mirror
Universe... It would make sense with the amount of crossovers. Oh, that's another episode too. The first DS9 episode was crossover.
But then the Mirror Universe has gone so far from our universe, which is why Emperor Georgiou had to go back in time.
Yeah.
To a point where they were closer together.
Yeah, and it would make sense. Like, you know, after 800 years, there'd be more instances where there'd be crossovers. And, And yeah, so it would be interesting to catch up with the Mirror Universe and see where they're at.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. So I've got high hopes for the rest of this season. This episode, though, that we just watched was only 52 minutes long, and next week's episode is going to be 58.
Okay.
So yeah, we started, 59 minutes, 53, 56, 52, and then we're going to 58.
Yeah,
so,
right. Okay.
Yeah. Hopefully, like by the end, I'm hoping that we get like an episode that's over that hour and they really just push it through.
I would probably put money on that the last episode will be, given that we know that the season 5 had wrapped filming.
And they had to go back.
And and then they found out the show was cancelled. So they went back and did some more filming and stuff like that. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if... they would have changed some scenes, but then also inserted a few extra. So yeah, I wouldn't be surprised in particular if the last episode was kind of an extra length episode.
Yeah, they just add that bit extra in there to tie everything up nicely. Tie it up
as a series, not just as a season.
Mm.
Yeah.
Anyway, Maddie, where can we find you on social media, my friend?
You can find me on Instagram at HighPitchMaddie, HIGHPITCHMATTY.
And you can find myself at Geek in Camo. Or if you want to see the other stuff that I get up to, you can find me at Precision Rifle Guy.
Yeah. Enter at your own risk.
All right. Until the next episode, Mirrors, that's us out. Bye. anything you want to add in at the end there, Maddie?
Send nudes. Get into geek.